They're back for our favorite 30 minutes of the week, where we have an opportunity to prepare ourselves for Shabbos. We have an opportunity to prepare ourselves with some Divrei Torah for the Shabbos table, and hopefully some food for thought. Obviously, we did not have last week, as last week was Erev Rosh Hashanah, and this will be our last one until after Sukkot. Right, next week is Erev Sukkot, the week after is Simchas Torah, so we're going to wait until Parshas Bereishis. But until then, I want to wish everyone a Gemar Chasima Tova, that it should be a year of good health and happiness and nachas. Everyone should have an easy and meaningful fast. And again, as I remind everyone in every call we've had, it's important to remember that Hashem could hear your tefillos from wherever you are. And so whether you are able to daven in shul or whether you are davening at home, the good news is that Hashem could hear you no matter what. Hashem can listen to your tefillos no matter what, as long as they truly come from the heart. And so with that in mind, whatever it is that you are davening to Hashem for this year, Hashem should hear your tefillos and answer them for you, our community, and for all of Klal Yisrael. Okay, so we have three ideas, 30 minutes. Parshas Hazinu usually doesn't get a lot of play. And the reason why Parshas Hazinu usually doesn't get a lot of play is for one of two reasons. Either it's like this year, where it's Shabbat Shuva, in which case most rabbis, the Minhag America, I don't know how this became, but the Minhag America is because the rabbi is giving a Shabbat Shuva drasha, so he doesn't give a drasha on Parshas Hazinu. So most people don't know a lot about Hazinu. The other time Hazinu comes is if it's in between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. So there, for sure, Rabbi, maybe he'll share a quick Dvar Torah, but he's not giving a full-fledged drasha. So we don't know a lot about Parshas Hazinu. But here's the good news, is that the reason I am here today is because I do not give a Shabbat Shuva drasha. It's one of the great blessings of being an associate rabbi and not the senior rabbi, is that today is a little bit more relaxed. I take a few less tums than most rabbis in the country today. And so I have the ability to talk about Parshas Hazinu, something that most rabbis are not able to do. So here we go. With that in mind, I will share three ideas. Each one I think is magnificent and beautiful. And obviously, I always welcome your feedback. I always debate whether to start with my favorite idea or to end with my favorite idea. Today, I'm going to start with my favorite idea. Here we go. Right at the beginning of the parsha, the pasuk says, "Kishem Hashem Ekra, Havu Godel Lelokenu." Right, when I call out to Hashem's name, I will give glory to Hashem. Now, the Gemara in Brachos, Maseches Brachos, quotes this pasuk as the source that Birchas HaTorah, that the blessing you and I say in the morning before we learn Torah, is actually a mitzvah deoraisa. In fact, the Ramban says that not only is it a mitzvah deoraisa, but the Ramban quotes it as one of the examples of where he thinks the Rambam went wrong. Maimonides does not quote this as one of the 613 mitzvos. And the Ramban, in his 15th, basically complaint against the Rambam, lists Birchas HaTorah, the blessing that you and I say every morning about the Torah that we learn. He lists that as one of the mistakes that the Rambam made when counting his 613 mitzvahs. Now, according to this Ramban, something amazing falls out, which is that there are, according to the Ramban, two biblical brachos, that you and I make in the entire Torah, right? You take an apple, you make a Bori Pre Eitz, biblical bracha. You take a drink, you say shahakol, rabbinic bracha. You take a date, you say rabbinic bracha. There are only two brachos, according to the Ramban, that you and I make that are biblical in nature, that are mide oraisa. One is Birchas HaTorah, our parsha, Kishem Hashem Ekra Havu Godel Elokeinu. And number two is Birchas HaMazon, what we say after we eat bread. And according to this, if you think about it, something magnificent comes out. Rabbi Benjamin Blech, in an article that's published on the National Council of Young Israel's website, so he says there's an enormous significance to Birchas HaTorah and Birchas HaMazon being the only two biblical mitzvos that we make. There is, so to speak, like an equation between the two of them. And what is that equation? So whereas bread represents our physical sustenance, Torah represents our spiritual sustenance. Whereas bread nourishes us physically, Torah is just as important and nourishes us spiritually. You cannot have one without the other. And so therefore he says, these are not just two random brachos that happen to both be biblical. They're both biblical on person because there's a correspondence between them. And that is both our physicality and our spirituality. That when we thank Hashem for bread, we're thanking Hashem for our physical body, for taking care of our physical needs, for sustaining us physically. When we say Birchas HaTorah, we're not thanking Hashem for our physical composition, but rather we're thanking Hashem for our spiritual composition. That Hashem nourishes us spiritually just as much as he does physically. That in and of itself, I think, is a beautiful idea. But he points out, he goes on to say, that if you think about it, there's a discrepancy between Berchas HaMazon and Berchas HaTorah, and that is where we place the actual bracha. So for example, you and I sit down tonight, we're going to have hamotzi, filet mignons, whatever it is that you're going to eat at your Friday night dinner table. Okay? You're going to wash, you're going to make hamotzi. When do you do Berchas HaMazon? You do Berchas HaMazon after the meal, as opposed to Berchas HaTorah. When I say Berchas HaTorah in the morning, have I learned Torah yet? No. In fact, I'm not allowed to learn Torah before reciting Berchas HaTorah. Berchas HaTorah must, halachically, come before, not like Berchas HaMazon, which must come after. Ask Rabbi Blech, why is that the case? Why is it that by Berchas HaMazon, it comes after, whereas Berchas HaTorah, it comes before? First of all, I'd like to give a quick shout out, I have to my daughter, Rina, who's watching and eating her breakfast, sitting so nicely, listening to her father teach Torah. So hi, Rina. Now I'll get a big smile from her. Ah, that was worth it. Okay, sorry. You guys will indulge me. You all have grandchildren. Some of you have grandchildren. You'll understand what it's like. Okay. Anyways, so why is that? So Rabbi Blech points out something magnificent. He says that before a person eats, they are overwhelmed with gratitude, right? My stomach is starving right now. So when I sit down to eat and there's food there for me to eat, I don't need any impetus to thank Hashem. Of course, I'm overwhelmed with gratitude to Hashem. I'm starving. I have a physical need. Hashem is providing me with my physical needs. Great, Hashem, thank you so much. After I eat, and I've already been sustained, and I have the sense of security and comfort that comes with knowing that I have a full belly, then it's easy to forget to thank Hashem. Then it's easy to forget to jump out of your seat and to go on to the next thing. And so Birchas HaMazon comes at the end. Why? Because at the beginning, that's very easy. All of us are going to remember to thank Hashem. I was starving. God provided food. Hashem, thank you so much. It's afterwards, when I've already had my belly filled, and I've already had that sense of security and comfort, and I'm not worried about starving to death, then it's easy, very easy, to forget the sense of gratitude that we need to have to Hashem. And so Birchas HaMazon doesn't come before, because we don't need Birchas HaMazon before. We need Birchas HaMazon afterwards to remind us to thank Hashem. Birchas HaTorah, Rabbi Blech points out, is the exact opposite. Birchas HaTorah, when I sit down to learn, I open up a Gemara, maybe a Chumash, maybe a Musar Sefer, maybe a Sefer Chassidus, whatever it is that I learn. It's not easy. It's not always so easy to sit down and to break your teeth over a daf of Gemara. That's very, very hard to do. And so oftentimes, and you could ask any boy who's in yeshiva, any adult who gets up early in the morning to learn daf yomi or whatever, it's really hard to generate that excitement. You do it. You do it out of a sense of requirement, out of a sense of commitment, dedication to Torah and to Hashem, but it's not always the easiest thing. And so Birchas HaTorah comes before the mitzvah to excite us towards the mitzvah, to remind us of its inestimable value, of this great gift that Hashem has given every single one of us. And so while yes, Birchas HaMazon represents Hashem's gift to us physically, and Birchas HaTorah represents Hashem's gift to us spiritually, they come at different points to each compensate for how we are feeling emotionally at that period of time. Because by Birchas HaMazon, I'm desperate at the beginning of my meal, I don't need a reminder to thank Hashem. I'm gonna thank Hashem anyways. It's after the meal, when in all likelihood, I jump up and run on to the next thing and, oh, you know, it's like the famous joke they say about the guy who's looking for a parking spot. So you those of you who lived in Manhattan, we lived on the Upper West, you know, in Washington Heights for a couple of years. You'll understand this analogy. But you're circling for a spot, you know, alternate sides parking. Remember, that's why we all escaped New York, right? So you're circling for a spot. And you're circling, and you're circling, and you're davening to Hashem. Hashem, if you only give me a spot, I'll start doing Shnayim Mikra Vecha Targum. And still you're circling, circling. Hashem, if you give me a spot, I'll learn all of Shas. I'll give my entire wealth away to Tzedakah. Finally, out of the corner of his eye, the guy sees that a spot opens up. And he looks up to God. He says, God, never mind, I already got a spot, right? So that's how we relate to food. When we're starving, we're like, Hashem, please, thank you so much for this delicious meal. It's amazing. Afterwards, okay, on to the next thing. So Birchas HaMazon comes afterwards to remind us to thank Hashem. Birchas HaTorah comes beforehand because we need a little bit of encouragement to feel that excitement. We need a little bit of encouragement to feel just how sweet Torah is and its inestimable value. So that's idea number one. I think it's a beautiful idea about the difference between Birchas HaMazon and Birchas HaTorah, the only two biblical brachos that you and I make throughout the day according to the Ramban, and this beautiful insight into what each one represents. Idea number two comes from Rav Sichos Musar of Rav Chaim Mivalashin. And it comes from the Pasuk, again, the Parsha is very short, so it's all from the beginning of the Parsha. But the Pasuk says, Hatzur tamim po'alo, ki chol drachav mishpat, right? God is perfect. Again, we know these words from a funeral, right? But God is perfect. El emunah, he is trustworthy. Ve'ein avel, which means that God is never false. Ask from Chaim Shmuel Levitz, what kind of compliment is that to God? That God is never false. Did we expect anything different of God? Do we expect anything different from ourselves? In other words, the Pasuk is contrasting our system of justice to God's system of justice. Well, wouldn't I expect myself to be just as well? In other words, we had on Behind the Bima this week, Judge Alvin Hellerstein. You could watch it on YouTube, you could watch it on podcast, whatever the case might be. One of the things he spoke about is how judicious he is in the judgments that he makes, how careful he is to get it right. Now, we would never praise a judge and say, you know what, you did your job. You didn't lie, you didn't cheat, you didn't take a bribe. No, that the baseline is that the judge is going to do the right thing. Every now and then you have a few bad apples. So this is a graisa compliment to Hashem. Hashem, you never lie, you don't bend the truth. Of course we expect that from Hashem. So why do we give Hashem this compliment of ve'ein avel, that Hashem, there's no falsehood in what he does? Explains Ruchaim Shmuel Levitz, quoting Rav Yitzchak Blazer. He says the following, v'chi ma shevach u'lemishpatei HaKadosh Baruch Hu bazeh she'ein bahem avel? What is the compliment to Hashem that he doesn't lie? Do we not hold ourselves to that same status, to that same level of expectation of Ein Avel? So why is this such a big compliment to Hashem? He says, no, here's the answer. That no matter how hard you and I try, when it comes to judgment, we can never get it 100% right. We are human beings. By definition, that means that you and I are imperfect. By definition, that means that you and I are fallible. By definition, that means you and I are going to make mistakes. And even Judge Hellerstein, who's a wonderful man, a very honest, filled of dignity and integrity, he's going to get it wrong sometimes. You want to know why? Because he's a human being. Because he's just like me and you. Because he's imperfect. Because he makes mistakes. And in fact, on the podcast, he spoke about that. How they always have to issue the punishments on Friday. And he said the bad part about that is he has all Shabbos to ruminate about how he made mistakes and the decisions that he made and to second guess himself. Why? Because he's a human being. That's what it means to be a human being. By definition, every single one of us is imperfect. It's impossible for us to achieve absolute perfection, right? We have rules to follow, but the punishment is never going to perfectly fit the violation. That is simply the truth. You and I are human beings. We're imperfect. We're by nature fallible. Hashem is the opposite. Hashem is completely perfect. All reward, all punishment, all blessings, anything you and I get is exactly what we deserve. Says Ruchaim Shmuel Levitz, that's what it means. El emunah ve'ein avel. That is, of course we expect everyone to be just. But whereas we expect me and you to be just, and yet we also recognize that by nature, you and I are also imperfect, that by nature, you and I are also going to make mistakes. God is different. Hashem is absolutely perfect. And no matter what, he's going to get it right. Whether we like it or not, or whether we understand it or not, the reward we're going to get is meant. The punishment that we get is meant. Everything from Hashem is perfect. Now, I think this has a profound lesson to our awareness of this world in general, certainly during the last 6 months of COVID. Because we have this misnomer in all areas of life, but I'll say especially the sciences, but really any field, that we tend to think that our systems and our knowledge are perfect, right? You asked a doctor 6 months ago, 8 months ago about viruses, and they would think that they knew a lot more than they do now. And then we realize at various times in life that that's not the case. That while we do our best, we try our hardest with whatever information that we have in the latest research, we understand that we are innately, inherently imperfect. And that if you listen to what doctors were saying in March, and you listen to they got it wrong. No fault of their own. But they weren't playing with a full deck of cards. They didn't have all the information in front of them. And they're still trying to figure it out. Right? Research takes years and years and years and years to form conclusions. So by nature, you and I think we understand the world. And then all of a sudden we realize that we are very limited in our understanding of the world. It creates a sense of intellectual humility when we realize that even though we think that everything we understand is perfect, it's really not. That COVIDs are going to hit and other things are going to affect us that make us realize we thought we had it right. We thought we understood everything. Well, we simply don't. There's only one true perfection in this world. There's only one entity with no flaws that gets it right every single time, and that is none other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so whereas Hashem is perfect, you and I are inherently imperfect. We are fallible. We are filled with flaws. And even when we think we're going to get it right, we have to be overwhelmed with a sense of intellectual humility. I think this is such a critical point. It's a critical point when talking about our society in general, where each side, the left and the right, think that they have all the answers. I got news for you. No one has all the answers. Right? News break. The Republicans don't have all the answers and the Democrats don't have all the answers. Right? We think we understand this world, whether it's science or law or physics. Right? And then we remind ourselves that that's not the case. That we are continuing to evolve. That we have to continue to learn and understand and seek out knowledge. But we're never going to get it perfect. Only Hashem is going to be able to get it perfect. And I think if each one of us we're able to work on our intellectual humility just a little bit more, it would open us up to understanding other people's perspectives. It would open us up to not digging our heels and to believe that what we think is true is automatically true, but be willing to learn and to be willing to grow and to be able to take on new things. That's what we're here to do, not to get it right, but continue to grow and to continue to learn. So whereas idea number one was the beautiful idea of the difference between Birchas HaTorah and Birchas HaMazon, our physical nourishment and our spiritual nourishment. Idea number two is the reminder that only Hashem is perfect. You and I are naturally imperfect. And even though we try to get it right, we have to work hard to get it right, we have to remind ourselves that that perfection exists within human limits. But naturally, we're never going to get it fully right. Only Hashem will get it right. And I believe that if the world had just a little bit more of that idea, if the world had just a little bit more of that intellectual humility, we would all be much better off. That's idea number two. Idea number three is a medrash. Medrash at the beginning of the parsha. Hazinu hashamayim v'adabera v'sishma haaretz imrifi. Says the medrash, Moshe's making a party. Not a birthday party, but a goodbye party. Moshe's about to depart from this earth, and he wants to throw himself a little bit of party. And so who does he invite to the party? He invites Shamayim and Aretz. Says the Medrash, what's going on here? He says, imagine you and I are making a party. And you say to yourself, if I invite Reuven and Shimon finds out, then Shimon's going to be insulted. On the other hand, if I invite Shimon and Reuven finds out, then Reuven's going to be insulted. So what do? I invite both. Says the Medrash, that's exactly what went through Moshe's head. On the one hand, Moshe was born of earth. He's mankind. He's physical. He's imperfect, just like me and you. So if he invites earth, heavens are going to get insulted. On the other hand, Moshe lived in the heavens. Vayihi sham im Hashem. Moshe was with God in the heavens. And so Moshe says to himself, if I invite Shamayim, if I invite the heavens, then the earth is going to be insulted. If I invite the earth, then the heavens are going to be insulted. So what does he do? Hazinu Hashamayim v'adabera v'sishma aretz imrifi. Moshe invites both to his goodbye party. What is going on here? That Shamayim's going to get insulted, Aretz is going to bring the party hats, right? What's going on with Moshe's goodbye party? So the answer, I believe, is that this party that Moshe is throwing to himself is the most fitting tribute to who Moshe was. Because yes, on the one hand, we say, Hashamayim Shamayim LaHashem VeHaaretz Nasan Lifnei Adam. That on the one hand, we see the heavens as unattainable and unreachable, and that we are born of this earth. On the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu was different. Moshe was the only person in mankind who was able to scale the heavens, but what did he do when he scaled the heavens? He brought the Torah back down to earth. And by doing so, he reminded mankind, he reminded human beings of something essential, which is that we can be on this earth and yet still remain connected to the heavens. That the Torah is the bridge between Shamayim and Aretz. It's the link that is created between us on this earth and our ability to connect with Hashem all the way up in Shamayim. And so Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do something and give us a gift for eternity. And that was bridging the gap between Shamayim and Aretz. Moshe was born of this earth. He went up to the heavens and he brought us back a little gift from the heavens. And he says, if you hold on to it and you learn it and you study it and you cherish it and you love it, then you'll forever be connected with the heavens. And so when Moshe Rabbeinu makes his goodbye party, he invites both Shamayim and Aretz to remind us that while we are here on this physical earth, we are also meant to access the heavens. And we do so through a very simple mechanism. It's called Torah. So on its most simplest level, I think that this idea reminds us again of the value of Torah, of the central role that Torah plays in our lives, where even though you and I are created as physical beings, we're able to elevate our physicality through our study of Torah to connect ourselves to the heavens. It's Hashem's playbook. It's his diary. He gave it to us. He says, if you love me, you'll read it and you'll learn it and you'll know it. That's what Torah is for us. But I think there's another idea, and maybe I'll say an extension of this idea, and that's when it comes to the difference between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Because if you think about Yom Kippur, that you and I are going to celebrate, and I use that word on purpose, celebrate on Sunday night. So Yom Kippur, we are like the angels. We're like Moshe Rabbeinu living up in the heavens. We don't eat, and we don't drink, and we stand with our feet together. We act like angels for 25 hours. We are in the heavens. What's the holiday of Sukkot? Sukkot is when we invite the heavens down to earth. We don't go up to Hashem, but through all of those things, eating and drinking and sleeping and playing games with each other, but doing so in the sukkah, we've now invited Hashem down to us. And so what better contrast in holidays to strike home this idea of our ability to connect heaven and earth? And there's no better way to do it than the study of Torah. Torah is the primary mechanism through which you and I are able to elevate ourselves and connect ourselves to Hashem, that we are able to bridge Shamayim and Aretz, that we are able to bring down the heavens a little bit into this earth by living through a life of halacha and living a life of Torah in mitzvos. That is how we ultimately bridge the gap. I'll share with you a corollary to this idea, which I think is beautiful, and that is that you'll notice that the Torah here is called a song. Even if you look in a Sefer Torah, it's written like a song, right? Like Az Yashir, it's actually written like a song. Why is the Torah compared to a song? So we've offered many interpretations. Let me add one more. Rav Yitzchak Herzog, first chief rabbi of the state of Israel, gave an analogy. He says, let's take physics, okay? So if you are a physicist, I don't know if anyone here is a physicist, but if you are a physicist and you engage me in a conversation with physics, you will be very passionate about physics. And you'll be very excited about physics. And you'll get all animated and dynamic about your physics, and it'll all make sense to you. And you know what it will sound like to me? Do you guys remember from, I think it was like Peanuts, where it's like, right? That's what it sounds like to me. Complete and utter gibberish. I will not understand a word you are going to be talking about in one ear, out the other. Now, how is that possible? To you, physics is so beautiful. To me, it's not only gibberish, but it's like mind-numbing and put me to sleep. So the answer is that if it happens to be your field, so you'll appreciate it. If it's not your field, you're going to be bored sick by it. Says Rabbi Herzog, Torah is different, right? Music is different. That if you think about music, let's take Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. I think that's the one that goes dun 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 dun, right? I don't know. My mom would be embarrassed that I don't even know that. But I think that's Beethoven's Fifth, right? If I say, oh, my daughter's nodding, so it's Beethoven's Fifth, okay? So if I say Beethoven's Fifth, dun 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 dun, right? So whether you are Rina Zisel Moskowitz, or whether you are someone who plays in an orchestra, every single one of you is going to appreciate the music. Music has that ability to connect both with someone who is a master in music and a layman, a simple person, just like me and you. Every single person is going to have an appreciation, is going to have a level of joy from what they hear. It might be on their own level, but everyone's going to be able to have a relationship with that music. Says Rabbi Herzog, you want to know why Torah is compared to a song? You want to know why Torah is compared to a music? Because it's not like physics. It's not like chemistry. Basically, I'm going through all the subjects in high school that I couldn't wait to get rid of, right? It's not like math. You lost me in math when it became more about letters than numbers, right? It's not about any of that stuff, right? Torah is a song. It means that whether you are a five-year-old child just learning to read, or you are someone in their 80s, 90s who's been learning your whole life, Torah is going to speak to you. Every single one of us is going to have a connection and an appreciation for Torah. So that was like 3 A, B, and C, but it all, you know, related around Torah. So we did three ideas in 30 minutes. Let's summarize for a second and send us off into Yom Kippur with a little bit of a bracha. Idea number one was that beautiful idea about the contrast between Berchas HaTorah and Berchas HaMazon, a reminder that we're not just physical bodies, but we're also spiritual human beings, and that God sustains us and nourishes us in both regards. He gives us bread, physical nourishment, and He gives us Torah, spiritual nourishment, and we have to thank Hashem for both. We have two biblical brachos, Berchas HaTorah and Birchas HaMazon. That was one. 1B was the beautiful insight of Rabbi Blech, that Birchas HaMazon comes afterwards, because that's when we need to be reminded to thank Hashem. Birchas HaTorah comes beforehand, because that's when we need the encouragement, the enthusiasm, the excitement to propel ourselves to learning Torah. Idea number two was the idea of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the reminder that no matter how hard you and I try, and we should always try to get it right, we are naturally imperfect. We are naturally flawed. That's just how we were created. Only God has the notion of perfection. And therefore, we should sustain that level of intellectual humility. We should be reminding ourselves that even though we might feel very strong in our convictions, maybe, just maybe, we're not always right. And maybe someone else's perspective has a little bit of wisdom, and that we can learn a little bit from it. And I do believe fundamentally that if every single one of us were to work on that sense of intellectual humility, it would lead to greater understanding, it would lead to less fighting, it would lead to less vitriol in our society. I believe that is incredibly important as well. And this last idea was this, think about Moshe's goodbye party. Moshe throwing himself a big party, who does he invite? Heavens and earth. Because Moshe did something amazing. That while he was a man of this earth, he ascended the heavens and he brought something back with him. He brought back the Torah. He brought back that song that everyone from a 3-year-old to a 120-year-old is able to connect to. He gave us the capacity to bridge the gap between heaven and earth. And so with that, I want to wish everyone a Gmar Chasima Tova. I want to wish everyone a happy, healthy, productive new year, one filled with much blessing for you and your family, Nachas, Parnasa, and that please God, we should be Zocha to be learning together in person, that the difficulties and the loneliness and the pain and suffering of COVID should be behind us, and that Tavshein Pei Aleph should be the best year yet, full of enormous bracha and mazel. I want to wish everyone a beautiful Shabbat.